for about a month, I think, around Christmas, and she'll build on that in some special institute afterwards, you know.
Super. Super. Okay, give her a hug from me, okay?
Okay, will do.
And you have hugs and hellos from sisters and Clement and Rock.
Ah, good. Yeah.
Okay. My brother, my what's his brother-in-law, eh? I think.
Brother-in-law, yeah.
Okay. So, when did you start working with breathing, you know? The first question. Or maybe you can introduce yourself. Who are you then?
Breathing is my pass eye on. Uh-huh. It's my profession.
Okay.
Profess. Eye on.
Uh-huh.
You know, I got hooked on breathing at birth and had some early childhood kind of triggers, I guess. I can remember in Catholic school in kindergarten or first grade and hearing about the first book of Genesis and how God breathed into us the breath of life and
mm-hmm.
man became a living soul. I don't know, something, you know, a child's imagination or the state I was in, something just sparked me at that time, and then a series of things, near drowning and getting the wind knocked out of me and various things like that kept returning my focus to the breathing. And then out of high school, graduating high school, I went as an x-ray technician. I loved doing chest x-rays and looking inside. And
mm-hmm.
and every time you take a chest x-ray, you have to tell somebody to take in a deep breath and hold it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, before I knew it, I had watched about 1,000 people do that in their own particular way and began to notice some patterns, and I got more curious. And then I was invited to get onto the crash team at Boston City Hospital, which was doing, you know, CPR, uh-huh. cardiopulmonary resuscitation, reanimation. And wow, the first time I blew into somebody who was clinically dead and had no pulse and wasn't breathing and pounded on them and blew into them and they woke up and blinked, I was totally hooked on the miracle of breath. And I couldn't wait till the next person had a heart attack so I could jump in there and rescue them. And you know, life, if you love something, existence keeps giving you great opportunities. And so, you know, I'd be on a beach and someone would drown. I'm in a restaurant and someone would choke on food. And, you know, I'm on a plane and someone has a heart attack. And so, you know, it just seemed like I was attracting it. I thought for a while I might be bad luck, you know, maybe I shouldn't get too close to me. But then around the mid-70s, early 70s, I discovered rebirthing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just amazing because I, instead of coming upon people who were dead and breathing with them and making them alive, I could work with people who were already alive,
mm-hmm.
breathe with them and make them more alive.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to continue doing what I really love, but on a little lighter, higher level maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And then visits to India and China, trying to find anyone who was doing anything with breath, and I was either kissing their feet or breathing down their neck and just trying to absorb as much as I could.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty soon it seemed I had accumulated or synthesized so much that I had somehow stumbled onto my own style, and somewhere along the line became a teacher. I continue as a student, which I think is the best way to keep growing as the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
But I've invented some things myself and mastered things that other people taught me and synthesized things. And so I can't really find the beginning line anymore. It's just a big blur.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, working with 80,000 people or so, I've been able to get a pretty good sense of what's possible and develop lots of approaches and methods and techniques and exercises.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the only thing that I've really been doing for my whole adult life consistently.
Okay, great. So tell me, what is actually rebirthing? Can you tell people something about rebirthing?
You know, rebirthing is a specific breathwork method. It was invented by Leonard Orr.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a specific technique, conscious, connected, circular energy breathing. You breathe in a way where the inhale is active and the exhale is passive.
Mm-hmm.
There are no pauses or gaps between the breaths.
Mm-hmm.
In one way that Leonard described it was just the merging of the outer breath, which is air,
mm-hmm.
with the inner breath, which is spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And when those two come together, some very natural healing and transformation occurs. And I can certainly testify that that's exactly what happens. And it's set within a philosophy that's kind of Eastern, but also very unique in Leonard's point of view, that involves doing consciousness work, working with the elements, earth, air, water, and fire, doing various other spiritual purification techniques, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But the core of it is that very specific way of breathing, which is something that I initiate everyone into at my first opportunity. And then
mm-hmm.
I find that if people can really get that technique and that get good at that,
mm-hmm.
it's the ability to breathe energy,
mm-hmm.
then any other breathing exercises or techniques they do, they get a lot more out of than the average person much more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of the core things that I teach.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of a kind of a repertoire of lots of different breathwork methods and approaches.
Mm-hmm. And how many different techniques do you teach? Which are they, and why are they good for? You know.
Well, everyone. I ask either consciously or unconsciously. I ask three questions of myself.
Mm-hmm.
Or the other person when people come to me, because people come and they're at different levels, they have a different direction, they're starting from a different
mm-hmm.
place, they have different goals and intentions, and so different breathing exercises are more suited to certain people at certain times. So I basically ask myself, okay, what is this person's level of skill?
Mm-hmm.
Have they done different breathing exercises? Have they gotten locked into certain breathing patterns? Have they experimented with their breath?
Mm-hmm.
What's their level of health?
Mm-hmm.
Are they a peak athlete, or are they a frail elderly person not able to even sit up in bed?
Mm-hmm.
Because what we'll do and where we'll go will depend on that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third question is, what's their purpose in practicing? What do they want to accomplish? What do they think is possible?
Mm-hmm.
And so once I get an intuitive sense of that, then we just play with their breath. We begin to look for some obvious flaws, strengthen some patterns that are really supportive, and bring awareness to different habits or reflexes that may be inhibiting their success or their health or their movement forward.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an intuitive approach that that kind of, it relies on intuition.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a basic set of skills, let's say, that I really try to work or get everyone to master.
Mm-hmm.
Basic set of life skills.
Mm-hmm.
And then once people get those life skills under their belt, then they're in a really good position to intuitively move towards whatever method or style is best for them, and it helps me to determine which techniques or exercises we want to focus on and work with.
Mm-hmm. So which are these two or three basic things which you...
Yeah, the basic things are breath awareness.
Mm-hmm.
People need to become more aware of their breath,
mm-hmm.
and as a method of meditation, to simply sit
mm-hmm.
and don't do anything with the breathing, just observe it. Just sense it, feel it, watch it, listen to it, tune into the details of it, and just begin to develop a more conscious rapport with their breathing habits and patterns. And so this practice of breath awareness is the first key.
Mm-hmm.
And also taking that practice of breath awareness into their everyday life. So they begin to observe how they breathe in different situations and circumstances, mm-hmm. when someone insults them, when they're listening to music, when they're in pain, when they're feeling wonderful, when they're trying to solve a math problem, mm-hmm. and to just begin to notice that breathing patterns change according to our psychological, emotional, physiological states, mm-hmm. and that the breathing is affected by different thoughts and feelings and activities and other people's energy and the food we eat. Mm-hmm. And so that's the first key, mm-hmm. is, and no one can do it for you. People have to simply begin to develop that habit of breath awareness, tuning into their breathing. Mm-hmm. That's the first skill. And the more aware people become of their breath, the more they get from the breathing exercises. Mm-hmm. The second skill is being able to use the breath, engage the exhale to produce relaxation, to trigger relaxation, to learn how to let go energetically. Mm-hmm. And because if you can't let go of your breath, if you can't let go of your exhale fully and freely and quickly and completely, mm-hmm. then don't be surprised if you can't let go of pain. Mm-hmm. Don't be surprised if you can't let go of fear. Don't be surprised if you can't let go of thoughts that are going around and keeping you kind of stuck and obsessed. But when you develop this ability, the skill of letting go of the breath, you find that you can let go of many other things really easily. So that's the second skill, is to really get good at using the breath to learn to let go of physical tension and lots of other things. Mm-hmm. And then the third skill is just breath control. To begin to be able to breathe with a certain tension, mm-hmm. give the breathing pattern a certain quality, to be able to breathe quickly, breathe slowly, breathe through your nose, breathe through your mouth, breathe high in your chest, breathe mm-hmm. low in your belly. And so there's a whole set of skills that we explore in that breath control aspect. But the three things are awareness, relaxation, and all it.
Mm-hmm. Great. Let me see. In which situations, where can we use the breath? You know, like you're explaining so many things. So actually people can use breath all the time for all the different situations.
Yeah, you can use breathing to center yourself, mm-hmm. focus mm-hmm. your energy, your attention. I mean, if you look at elite athletes, look at the Olympic competitors, someone on the edge of a diving board, for example, and they're in position, their toes are curled around the edge of the board, and just before they dive, what do? Mm-hmm. They take a breath. Mm-hmm. And so you use it to enhance performance. You use it to clear away distractions and help you focus. Mm-hmm. You can use it to charge your system to give yourself more energy. Mm-hmm. You can use breath, and actually one of the things we do is to get people to begin to creatively, to find for themselves creative ways to use the breath. Mm-hmm. So you combine breathing with visualization, mm-hmm. breathing with affirmations, breathing with movement, breathing with sound. And so you find ways to integrate conscious breathing into whatever else it is that you do. Mm-hmm. So we use breath for healing, for awakening, mm-hmm. for de-stressing, for dealing with anxiety, mm-hmm. And just for creating really wondrous ecstatic states, mm-hmm. to be able to breathe yourself into a really resourceful state. And so lots and lots of ways to apply the breath.
Mm-hmm. Once you said on one of your YouTube interviews, you said that the longest path to work, to walk, is from the mind to the heart. Can you
right, from the head, from the head to the heart.
Yeah,
longest journey. And that's because, being heart-centered is a much more powerful, resourceful way of being in the world. I mean, there's lots, if you go to the heart math, website, heartmath.com, I think, is the research they're doing. I mean, there's more, the heart generates more electrical, electromagnetic energy than the brain does. Mm-hmm. And the field of energy that surrounds the heart is far wider and bigger than the field around the brain and the head. Mm-hmm. And we've kind of gotten disconnected from our spirit by kind of getting locked into the mind, and it seems to make perfect sense that if you want to solve a problem, you would turn to your mind. However, what if the mind itself is the problem? and why would you turn to your mind to solve a problem if you could turn to the source of your mind to solve a problem? Mm-hmm. And when we get into our hearts, we begin to contact that greater source that's beyond the mind in a way, and beyond the level of duality. And it's really no coincidence that the heart, that the lungs are wrapped around the heart. Mm-hmm. That the heart is literally surrounded by the lungs. And so when we work with breathing, we can begin to open and empower and work with our heart. Which is really, I mean, it's the solution to world peace. It's the solution to, you know, there's no confusion when you come from your heart. There's no conflict. There's something more pure and bright about it. So that journey of out of our head and our conditioning and programming into our heart, which is the door to spirit and the infinite and to our divine being, our higher self, that's why the journey is so necessary.
Mm-hmm. And I guess not only the breathing, not just squeezing the lungs around the heart makes the heart that you got into contact with your heart, but what actually the breathing does that you are more connected with your soul?
Well, every time we have ever had a shock or a trauma, a physical shock or pain or emotional trauma, psychological trauma, mm-hmm. we held our breath.
Yes.
It interrupted the smooth, ecstatic flow of breath energy and our connection to our spirit. And so after hundreds of thousands of kind of mini shocks and traumas, mm-hmm. we've gotten disconnected from our spirit in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And so breathing helps us to reconnect in a very direct way to our essence, to our original self, to our inner child,
mm-hmm.
to our greater potential.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of the logic behind it, and it's also the benefits of it.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Wait a moment, please.
Can you order a brownie and maybe some tea instead of coffee? Some kind of tea you would like also?
Uh-huh. So what about uh-huh. this? A person imagines that, you know, we are just going to breathe deeply for, I don't know, a minute or a few minutes, and
mm-hmm.
The problems will be solved, you know? Like, is it really that easy or not?
The problem may not be solved, but
uh-huh.
the issues
uh-huh.
Causing the problem will be identified very quickly,
uh-huh.
and a path towards solving the problem
uh-huh.
will be very quickly seen.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, sometimes just in the process of focusing on the breathing, we're taking energy away from the trauma, the problem, the issue. And when we're breathing consciously, we're not doing what we would have been doing or are habitually doing,
mm-hmm.
and that creates a space, a possibility for change.
Mm.
So, yeah, sometimes it is just a very simple matter of just focusing, you know, on the breath, which puts us into a different state where we can have literally a aha, you know, we can literally be inspired. We can suddenly get information that we, you know, we couldn't get. Things just pop into our consciousness
mm-hmm.
Kind of intuitively.
Mm-hmm. Great. Can't wait to work with you then again.
It was really fun on the last, our first visit to Slovenia. I'm really looking forward to it again. Yeah.
Me too. Yeah. We lack inspired.
And you know, all the
like
video
me.
Taping that we've done,
yeah?
We did,
uh-huh.
That would be really useful to transcribe and
mm-hmm.
pick out highlights
mm-hmm.
and clips and zero in on key points
mm-hmm.
in order to produce kind of a summary or outline or even some bullet points for training and that kind of thing. It's you know, we covered a lot of stuff and I kind of rambled, but there are a lot of gems and a lot of really useful stuff, and if we could put together some bits of transcripts or
mm-hmm.
quotes and things out of that, we could prepare something and save people a lot of time and trouble, and we can kind of build on what we did on our first visit.
Mhm. Mhm. Good.
Not like you're not busy enough already with everything else you're doing.
I know. Maybe we won't prepare this by the time you come, but maybe during the summer, where I hope more time will be something like that could happen with a bit of help from some other people.
Yeah, good.
Mm.
Yeah, enroll some support and
mm-hmm.
let them do some work and exchange a partial exchange
mm-hmm.
for participating in the upcoming stuff.
Mhm. Mhm. Good idea. Mm-hmm. Can you give our readers a hint what to do to relax when we are in stress? What is, you know, like your quick, suggestion?
The quick suggestion is, you know, there are three things that we can do to change our state
mm-hmm.
in a minute,
okay.
guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
And so getting people to focus on those three things. And the first thing is you change your focus.
Okay.
If people are suffering from stress or anxiety or some kind of upset, they're focusing on something.
Mm-hmm.
And what they need to do is just change their focus
mm-hmm.
To anything else, and just discharge the energy from where it's locked up or flowing.
Mm-hmm.
Change the focus.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is to change our self-talk, change our language. Whenever we're suffering anxiety or anything, we are talking to ourselves in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
The quality of our self-talk is a certain quality
mm-hmm.
vibration to our self-talk.
Mm-hmm.
Watch the language we're using. What are we telling ourselves? What meaning are we giving to the events?
Mm-hmm.
Things happen, but they occur to us in specific ways depending on how we interpret and what meaning we give to them.
Mm-hmm.
So get conscious of that and change that.
Mm-hmm.
Shift the language to a higher vibration language, a more nurturing, supportive self-talk, rather than kind of a toxic, negative, critical, fearful kind of language that always accompanies
mm-hmm.
stress or anxiety. And the third thing is you change your physiology.
Mm-hmm.
Just change your posture, change the position of your body, jump up and down, do something to change your physiology, and that's where breathing comes in.
Mm-hmm.
If you change your breathing pattern, you will definitely change your physiology.
Mm-hmm.
So those three things can get people immediately, give them a way to shift their state, no matter what state they're in, to be able to shift out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Look at how you're breathing and change your breathing pattern. Look at what you're focusing on and change your focus. Pay attention to what you're telling yourself and what meaning you're giving to things and change those things.
Mm-hmm. Buon appetit, Dan.
Unfortunately,
mm.
people have to actually do it. No one can do it for them.
Many
times, you know, many times people would like everything in their life to change, but they don't want to change themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so somehow there's an aspect of what I call readiness. It's like people say, oh, yeah, I'd like to make more money, or, oh, yeah, I'd like to do fix this or change that. But very often you can sense a lack of real readiness. It's like, yeah, you know, I'd like to quit smoking, but you see them a week or a month later, and they're still smoking. So did they really mean it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes developing this real motivation for change mm-hmm. is a powerful prerequisite to making anything work.
Mm-hmm.
Because if someone is really ready to change, whatever they do is going to work.
Mm-hmm.
The next book they read, the next teacher they meet, the next exercise they do, it's going to work. Not particularly because of the power of the teacher or the book or the technique, but because of their readiness.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how to create readiness in people. That's something that needs to just somehow emerge within them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess there are ways you can inspire people. And sometimes desperation is a great motivator. If people just are desperate enough and they just can't bear to go on another moment the way life is, then they're ready.
Mm-hmm.
So I can sometimes help people reach that kind of critical point of desperation. And it's more fun to help them to enter a kind of a state of inspiration, you know, where you give them an experience that really inspires them about their own power and their own ability and their own potential, and that sparks the readiness.
Mm-hmm.
How are we doing?
Very good, Dan. I feel like I'm already sitting on your workshop. You're definitely inspiring me. Don't feel desperate at all. Who is welcome to your workshops? And who is welcome to your workshops? And if there are any limits, you know, like age limits or health or whatever.
No. If you have a belly button, then you're a good candidate for breathing. If you somehow have managed to get onto this planet without being born, then I'd like to meet you, but I'm not sure that breathing could be useful.
Okay.
Age doesn't really matter.
Uh-huh.
As long as you can maintain an attention level for a minute or two, that's all you really need. And so people who are on really serious psychiatric drugs or, you know, serious schizophrenic type, you know, out of control, bipolar kind of states, need to come with their therapist or need to be accompanied by someone who can support them in and out of the seminar session. But otherwise, there's no real limitations.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What can people expect from the workshop? From
miracles.
Yeah.
Expect a miracle. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And expect rapid change,
mm-hmm.
life-changing insights, very new feelings, a very profound energy experience, an opening of the heart experience, in an acceleration of your personal growth, maybe even a quantum leap in your performance if you're an athlete or an artist or a therapist, you can expect a real turbo charge to whatever you do.
Mm-hmm. Sounds great. Are there any topics? Just a moment. Are there any? Yes. Are there any traps? Are there any traps with some special techniques of breathing? You know, like certain breathing techniques have some traps, you know, where you can maybe do something wrong, yeah, or you lose yourself,
oh, yeah,
or
every,
something.
Every breathing technique can be a trap if you don't practice the opposite technique also.
Uh-huh.
Any breathing technique can be a trap if you aren't also working on awareness and relaxation.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to breathe like a robot, and you don't want to just open up a book on yoga that says inhale for the count of 8, hold for the count of 12, exhale for the count of 32, and then start to force that onto yourself.
Mm-hmm.
We need to develop kind of a gentle, intuitive approach,
mm-hmm,
and a balanced approach. And if you're not in harmony with nature or the universe, then you could make your process much more difficult and even hinder your growth in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So a balanced, gentle, broad approach,
mm-hmm,
honoring equals and opposites, not getting fixated on certain ideas or methods, keeps us really safe and also dramatically increases our, you know, the possibilities that we can create for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. So, what did you mean when, you know, like, you need to practice the opposite technique?
Well, if someone is practicing holding their breath,
uh-huh,
they need to practice setting their breath free, mm-hmm, and also practice moving their breath continuously.
Mm-hmm.
If someone is practicing a very regulated breathing pattern where the inhale is twice as long as the exhale,
mm-hmm,
then they need to practice a breathing pattern where the exhale is twice as long as the inhale.
I see. Mm-hmm.
If they're breathing into their chest all the time,
mm-hmm,
they need to practice breathing into their belly.
Mm-hmm.
If they've gotten hooked on diaphragmatic breathing and they're always breathing in their belly,
mm-hmm,
they need to breathe up in the chest and open up those spaces. So,
mm-hmm,
that's the kind of thing I mean.
Okay, thank you. Can people, after meeting you or working you just once, you know, we have one session, or just after joining one workshop, practice a certain technique which you taught them alone at home, safely?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we can, a person can leave a private session with some ideas on what they can do on their own,
mm-hmm,
definitely. That's the whole idea, because if people aren't really working on their own and developing their own kind of practice,
mm-hmm,
I can't really do much with them. I kind of, it seems like a waste of my time and energy. But if someone has a breathwork practice, if they're doing things on their own,
mm-hmm,
then wow, when they come to me, we can refine and tweak and adjust and build on what they're doing, and I feel like I'm making much better use of my time, and they're able to make much better use of me.
Mm-hmm. Great. Super.
So practicing on their own,
mm-hmm,
is actually required.
Super. So what would you suggest, for example, readers, if they would like to come to your workshops now in Ljubljana? Is there,
mm-hmm,
some technique which you would maybe suggest them for doing it the 2 or 3 weeks before they come?
Well, they should go to my website,
mm-hmm,
surf around,
mm-hmm,
look at different articles, download the ebook,
mm-hmm,
this collection of articles,
mm-hmm,
and just begin to find what it is that excites them,
mm-hmm,
what triggers a, ooh, aha, that sounds really interesting,
mm-hmm,
what turns them off, what turns them on,
mm-hmm,
and just start to pay more attention to their breathing, maybe practice some things so that when they come, they can say, oh, I did this, I tried that.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I think that's a good way to start. Go home and do a session with you and let them get a good taste of it before the seminar.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks. Okay, we met in India. Why, and you told me that you had a spiritual teacher from India, I think it was Papaji.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me more about, you know, how come you came to India, what inspired you in India, what, you know?
Yeah, what we're doing is actually the same thing that many ancient yogis did. We're self-explorers. We're self-determined scientists. And playing with the breath and practicing and exploring different breathing exercises. Many, many people have done that before us, and we can build on what they have discovered and how they have used and benefited. And India is a place where it has a history of breath work and esoteric and yogic practices and Taoist practices and Buddhist practices and so on. Mm-hmm. So it's the home of many really wise and accomplished spiritual seekers. So just to be in that energy and float around and make connections, we can awaken some ancient memories, and we can connect with some old friends that we may have forgotten from past lives. So I love India because it's kind of magical in that way.
What inspired you in your life then?
Well, I think the fact that my mother really sensed that she was never really going to understand me, that I was somehow connected to something and had a purpose that she couldn't really define or understand. She really gave me a real sense of unconditional love and support, that I was free to just go and do, walk my own path. I didn't feel like I was being forced to be anyway, mm-hmm. other than a good and loving person. And my father gave me tremendous freedom. My biological father, my mother and he divorced when I was 3, and she remarried, and my stepfather, who I always kind of considered to be my father, mm-hmm. He confided with me one time that he thought that because he wasn't really my father, that he didn't have any right to like make me do anything. And he told me that when I was like 18, and I looked back at my life and I thought, wow, yeah, you never did force me to do anything, but whenever you saw I was interested in something, you were like really quick to support me in it. Mm-hmm. And he had some beautiful skills and archery, and he loved nature and he loved music, and so I just got those kind of things from him. And so somehow I was, maybe more than some people, I was blessed with a really valuable home parental kind of foundation, you know, mm-hmm. which was a combination of freedom and safety. Mm-hmm. And I think that allowed me my initial inspiration. And then I think one of my early teachers was Ram Dass, Richard Alpert. He was that Harvard professor who mm-hmm. went to India and became a yogi. And mm-hmm. I met him, and he was a Harvard professor, but he sure didn't look like one. He didn't dress like one. He didn't act like one. He didn't talk like one. Mm-hmm. And so I always loved people who were out of the box. And he kind of, without realizing it, kind of implanted in me a seed that you can really be outside of the box and yet be very accepted by the mainstream, which, you know, was kind of important to all of us to be. You know, we don't want to be completely antisocial. We'd like to somehow, you know, be connected to the rest of the world, mm-hmm. but also free to be who we really are. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, my people like Leonard Orr, who invented rebirthing, and Swami Rama, who taught me prana yoga, and then ultimately Babaji, the immortal yogi in India, who I was with him in physical, when he was in physical form. You know, that was, it was like meeting God in the flesh, you know, mm-hmm. and seeing what's possible, what's the ultimate possibility for a human to actually be with someone who is able to model or demonstrate, you know, what's possible, you know, beyond what we have been taught or believe was possible. So those kind of inspirations. And then every time I work with somebody, I do a session and I watch in amazement as something really beautiful opens up in them mm-hmm. in such a simple, while doing such a simple thing as breathing, it inspires me continuously.
You're traveling a lot, doing workshops all over the world. Can you tell me some interesting thing that happened lately in one of your workshops, or you know, like your one of the sessions, which you know can be inspiring for people?
Yeah, you know, we. It seems to me everywhere I go, people are the same.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe I just attract a certain kind of person, so my view mm-hmm. of people is that they're basically loving, and that they're open and willing, and so maybe I just attract those kind of people. But that's my basic sense about everyone because of that. And yet people come from different walks of life. Like here in Bucharest, on my last visit, we had 3 air traffic controllers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I mean, never at a seminar mm-hmm. was there 3 air traffic controllers.
Mm-hmm.
and this time we have stewardesses. And so, you know, it's like people have a certain energy, or they're vibrating at a certain frequency, and yet they can appear in any role or any profession. And that's exciting to me. And then, like my visits to Cancun, where I met, you know, ridiculously wealthy people. You know, I mean, like the one percenters of the world that everyone is disparaging and demonizing.
Mm-hmm.
I've met people in the 1% who are completely awake and clear and supporting people and life and the world and the spiritual awakening of the planet
mm-hmm.
in ways that people who don't have those kind of financial resources could never do.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really wondrous. You know, I had my very first visit to Cancun. I didn't know the people. It was years ago. We communicated through email, and this really lovely, I got a loving message from someone who said, well, you know, I've been given this message that I need to contact you. Could you come to Mexico? And, wow, I had never been to Mexico, so I thought, sure, I'll go anywhere. I've never been. And I said, yeah, and then she wrote back and said, well, what, you know, what do you need to get financially to, you know, to come? And I thought, well, since I had already been excited about going to Mexico, and I said, well, if you take care of my travel and accommodations, then I'll stay there for a couple of weeks, and you can just pay me, say, $1,500. If you're going to take care of my ticket and my accommodations, then, it's like a paid vacation for me. And and she mentioned that she supported an orphanage and she worked with a lot of poor people and they didn't have a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, all right, well, just, you know, pay me $1,500 and you can gather 100 people or 10 people or whoever you want, just put me in front of them and they don't have to pay anything.
Mm-hmm.
So she wrote back to me and said, ah, that's really great, thank you very much, blah, blah, blah. And she said, oh, by the way, I booked you a room at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, wow, Ritz-Carlton Hotel, that's pretty cool. And so I had at the time a couple of people who wanted to finish their practitioner training with me, Bill and Julie. And so they had written to me and said, hey, the next time you do a training, let us know, and, you know, we'll come and join you, we can finish our training. So I went online and I realized that the cheapest room at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel was $450.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh my God. And so I wrote back to Yvonne, kind of jokingly. I said, hey, instead of paying me $1,500, I'll camp on, you know, I'll bring a pup tent and I'll find a little cheap hotel and, you know, give me the money that you were going to spend on the hotel for me. And don't,
mm-hmm.
you know, don't. And she just sends a little smiley face back, and then it turns out they own the Ritz-Carlton Hotel.
Wow.
And I was in the presidential suite with frescoes and paintings from Italy and a marble hot tub and three people who put your slippers on in the morning and stuff. So, you know, it was a real shift for me, you know. That was like a really exciting moment. And working in the prison, I went to Bolivia years ago, and I was at the San Pedro Federal Penitentiary in La Paz.
Mm-hmm.
And in this really horrible prison with, you know, I mean, gang wars and shootouts with guns, and everybody's strung out on heroin. And yet I had 25 guys who came every morning at 7:30 for 5 days a week that I was there and laid down and breathed and really went for it.
Mm-hmm.
I was so inspired that even in an atmosphere like this, you've got genuine seekers. You've got people who really want to change and want to grow, and they're struggling with really serious stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so that experience was really powerful for me. And so lots of cool things. Up in Yellowknife in the Northwest Territories of Canada, I arrived up there in a February morning, and it was 40 below zero.
Wow.
And it was, wow, it was a very rough and rude kind of atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
But I met these wonderful indigenous people, these tribes from, people from different tribes up there. And we did a breathing session on a buffalo skin that would take up a someone's living room. I never realized how huge a buffalo skin was, and the fur was like, you know, 6 inches deep. You walk on it, it was like walking into this thick, unbelievable thick carpet, and laying on that and breathing. It was just such a magnificent experience, and dealing with those extreme temperatures gave me some real practice at using my breath to generate heat and to be comfortable in extreme atmospheres. So many really great opportunities and times along the way.
Super. Thanks, Dan. Do you have some negative experience connected with breathing, or no?
I really can't say. So I in my own process of learning and being willing to be out of the box, I think at times I could have been a bit cavalier about other people's personal boundaries, which pissed them off, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I have at times deliberately alienated some of my peers because we had such strong disagreement about things. Any negativity that I could say I've experienced was definitely self-created. Nothing negative has ever happened to anyone who's practiced the breath work, other than there are some people who probably just say that, you know, they didn't appreciate some of my lack of boundary issues when I was not so conscious.
Mm-hmm.
But no one has ever really been harmed. I mean, breathing is the safest thing in the world when you think about it. Not breathing, it might be a bit dangerous.
Okay, then one or two more questions and we are finished. What is going to be happening in Ljubljana in Slovenia? Do you know?
we can do a real intensive breath mastery training,
mm-hmm.
so that those people who are ready and willing can, in a relatively short time, go very deep, very high, really fast, and get a lot of real experiential experience under their belt, so that they have a good foundation for not only continuing on their own, but beginning to help and coach other people. Because if you can create a benefit for yourself, someone's going to notice that, and they're going to ask you what it is you did, and then you're going to end up being in the role of a teacher. So I would like to use this visit to get people who may or may not want to be practitioners at least in a position where they can intuitively or confidently begin to share some of the basics. We can come up with themes that may be popular or wanted there, connecting breath to weight loss or stress or sports performance or anything like that, but something really pure to give people a really rich experience of breath work. So, for example, if they are doing other things, massage or body work or counseling or therapy or anything like that, that they can integrate the breath into whatever it is they're doing, their creative work, their healing work, their athletic competition, anything like that. So going deep and getting high and finding ways to embody our higher self and finding ways to trigger and activate inner resources so we can accelerate our personal growth, our evolution, our awakening. That would be my my passion, my excitement.
Okay. Sounds great. Sounds really great. Actually, for now, for till now, we've been discussing, me and my sisters, about how it would, you know, like look like, and we are thinking about having two weekend retreats, you know, like from Friday afternoon till Sunday afternoon, like we have in Jezersko. The first retreat would be probably in one spa center in Slovenia, and it would be about abundance, you know, breathing abundance, like, you know, like in every field, you know, like not just material money, but just opening up for, you know, like for life, for everything.
Perfect.
And the next weekend retreat would be, you know, like stress relief and something like that. It would be also on some mountain area, beautiful. And in between there would be, you know, from Monday till Thursday, every afternoon, like 4 or 5 hours workshops, like we had in Ljubljana.
Perfect.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Okay, do you have any message for the people, for Slovene people, for, you know, like universal message, your message?
Well, you know, everyone is looking for solutions to their particular issues or problems or challenges. And we can get caught in the idea that things are a lot more complicated or difficult or require much more time than they actually do. And that the simplest and most powerful things are always the most basic. So, you know, the most powerful things are always very simple and very basic. And what is more simple and basic than breathing? It's literally right under our nose. We overlook it, the power of it. We underestimate the power of it. And so when we set aside some time to really explore the power and potential of breathing, we can really surprise ourselves at how quickly things can come together, can move forward, can a certain ease and clarity can come. And so I'd like to encourage people to realize that the breath is exactly like that. It seems really obvious. It seems really simple. And people may be quick to say, well, come on, breathing, you know, look at that. And to get over that and to really dare to come and really explore and experience the power and the potential for themselves. So they don't need to be convinced. Mm-hmm. They don't have to believe anybody or anything. They'll have a direct cellular biological experience of the power of breath, and they won't need any convincing after that.
Great. Super. Wow, it was great then.
Yeah, wonderful talking with you.
Thanks for talking. Having time, you know, finding time in your schedule, busy schedule.
Yeah. Well, good. So I'll see you soon. Let's stay in touch. And as you put together, any flyers or stuff, send them over to me, and I'll let people know. There are maybe some people who will want to join us in Slovenia. So if they, I want to be able to let them know what's happening and so on.
Yeah, definitely. I think by the middle or the end of the next week, the flyers in English are going to be ready. So I'll send them to you, and you can check them up, and then we can start with the advertisement.
Very good.
Yeah?
Okay.
Say hi to Lyra. Have fun.
Okay, enjoy. Thank you. You too.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Okay, ciao.
Ciao.